live, but them don't like forgive. So don't fall yourself in that kind of category, because your sink will ship, your ship will sink. You want me say?
This is Leah McFly, Montreal's dancer. You're tuning in with The Morning Detour with Weezy and Soul K. Okay, KK.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
It was Sunday, January 26th of last year, when Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter Gianna and seven others were killed in a helicopter crash in Calabasas, California. The days and weeks that followed were marked with emotional outpourings of grief and appreciation from around the world as people celebrated the life and the legacy of one of the greatest players of all time.
For me, Skip, with Kobe, it still doesn't seem real. I knew what Kobe was in the basketball community. Skip, I did not know Kobe was this big. If you think about when guys do anything, play golf, you see golfers come out there with the Kobe jerseys on. Yep. You see tennis players come out there with jerseys on. You see football players with the cleats on. Mamba mentality, business world. You move from just being a basketball player, you move to being an icon that transcends sports. Skip, rap, you know, I saw a thing the other day. Is talking about players that's mentioned most in rap. Kobe is number one, and Michael Jordan is a distant second. That goes to show you how people, what they thought of him.
Yep.
Guess it's true, I'm not good at understanding. But I still need love, cause I'm just a man. Nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave. Will you hold my hand? Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all I need. This ain't love, it's clear to see. But darling, stay. Why am I so emotional? No, it's not a good look and some self-control. Deep down I know this never works. But you can lay with me so it doesn't hurt. Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all.
On that fateful Sunday morning and the foggy Sunday morning on that mountainside, we all wish that would have never happened. But I'm gonna remember him dropping 81 on Toronto. I'm gonna remember him dropping 60 in his last game. I'm gonna remember him dropping 62 in three quarters against the Mavericks.
Yep.
I'm gonna remember the virtuoso performances in the big games when you needed Kobe Bryant. And like I said, he's the closest thing that I've ever seen to Michael Jordan. And I don't know if we'll ever see someone like Mike and like Kobe again. Kobe was fun to watch. He didn't cheat you. You knew exactly what you were going to get from Kobe Bryant. Every single thing he got. He didn't cheat the process.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yes, good morning, Montreal. This is The Morning Detour on the mighty CKUT 90.3 FM, the best morning show in the city. What an emotional week. We started off with Sam Smith, Stay With Me. We're obviously doing a tribute to Kobe Bryant this morning. Ah, so much different things, boy. But before we get into the whole Kobe thing, we have some top stories happening. Studies show that 11% of Quebec businesses are at risk of shutting down. So, Lorena, money, people going to be losing more jobs right now.
Yeah.
Our Premier Legault, he's hinting at a possible lifting of certain COVID-19 measures in some Quebec regions. Montreal is now asking the Canadian government to decriminalize simple drug possession. It's about time, if you ask me. Montreal converts arena soccer stadium into homeless shelters. Listen, we have about 70,000 homeless people living in Montreal. And on top of it, we have a COVID pandemic. So it's about time that the city did something to keep the homeless people safe. And Quebec will exempt homeless from COVID-19 curfew after court finds rule endangered their safety. So a lot of things is going on. We got a big, big guest in the show this morning. We have social worker and psychotherapist David Archie came on to talk to us about domestic violence, because with a lot of us locked down, well, all of us is locked down, a lot of people have been trapped with their abusers. And I like to also add, Lorena, approximately every 6 days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner.
Wow.
One woman every 6 days is killed by her intimate partner. So beautiful conversation with psychotherapist David Archie. He has a master's in couple and family therapy, as well as a master's in social work. So it's a great, great interview with him as well. And if you guys don't know, we got some of the best hosts in the city. We got Lorena PR in the building. Right. She is the velour queen. She had more velour tracksuits than P. Diddy and Fabulous put together. How you doing this morning, Lorena?
I'm doing good. How are you doing this morning?
Well, listen, man, kind of emotional this morning. I was putting together the intro, start tearing up. On Tuesday was the anniversary of the passing of Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gigi and seven other passengers on that horrible helicopter crash that happened over Calabasas last January. And for me, Lorena, it was kind of daunting. I was in my car on Tuesday driving to Complex Care 514. I was listening to First Take and all the, you know, all the sports shows I normally listen to. Mm-hmm. And just to hear them talk about Kobe, you kind of realize, like, it's been a year and still it feels like it happened yesterday. You know, there's still
It doesn't feel real to me. Like, I see his pictures and I always say, like, I can't believe he's actually gone.
Yeah. It comes like a certain sense of disbelief a little bit. And it's crazy because, you know, I've seen some people tell me, like, oh, my gosh, you're crying over somebody you've never met. You're crying somebody you never talked to, someone that hasn't really impacted your life. And I said, well, I beg to disagree. Kobe Bryant offered me inspiration. You know, Kobe Bryant had this Mamba mentality, this work ethic that I applied to myself and my endeavors. And I viewed that as inspiration. So for people to say, oh, listen, how can you attach to someone you never met before? I think that's a little bit disingenuous. Of course, man, we get inspiration from many different people from different places. And I just happened to got mine from Kobe Bryant. And it was just a shame for him to go that early. And also, too, I want to talk about legacy. His legacy, man, you know, he left two daughters there. He passed away with one. It's tough. When I look at the Kobe Bryant career, I tell myself, Lumina, he worked so hard during the NBA, and now he's in the second chapter of his career, and he didn't get to enjoy it. And that's what kind of sucks. And it really puts an emphasis on everyone in the world to really, time is not something that we can play with. If you're trying to do something with yourself, if you're trying to achieve something, do it today. Don't wait for tomorrow. Because time waits for nobody. So, Kobe Bryant, Gigi, boy. You know, we had the Shannon Sharp on the intro. The Sam Smith had me tear it up, Lorena, man. It's been very emotional. I thank you for the beautiful Christmas gift Lorena got me, for those watching us on YouTube. I got the Kobe 60. But that's what Shannon Sharp was talking about. Let's remember the good times when he dropped 60 on that final game, when he went 80-plus on Toronto. I remember those times. I remember when he went to Rucker Park and people thought Kobe was bougie and he couldn't run with the boys in New York. They call him Lord of the Rings. You know, you try to remember the good times. You try to remember the good moments that said person impacted your life. Kobe Bryant, man, you're still amidst. Legends will never be forgotten. Wild morning, man. Wild morning. But, you know, we got a lot of different things going on. We have a jam of the week also, Lorena, this morning from Tokyo Sensei. It's called Real Friends, featuring Say Less and Kellogg's World. Some of the young peeps. I was trying to get the clean version, but it's clean enough. And thank you to Nicki Nash for recommending this jam of the week featuring a Montreal artist. I thought it was a good look as well. And we don't talk enough about it, but I'm going to be more visible online about it as well now moving forward. But we all know looking for a job is a job in itself. It's a very hard thing, right? You're kind of stressful. And like, oh, I got to redo my CV. I got to get out there. I got to go on Indeed. I got to go on Monster. But the Morning Detour has partnered up with GotTheJob.ca to help you get a CV makeover and land your dream job. So use the promo code DETOUR5 to get a discount on your purchase today. And let GotTheJob prepare you for your next beautiful endeavor and profession. So the promo code is DETOUR5, GotTheJob.ca. She redid my CV as well. It looks super professional, but I can't add on any more jobs, Lorena. So that's what that's going on. Soke will be joining us later in the show for the interview with psychotherapist David Archer. Lorena's in the building. It's the number one morning show in the city. It's the Morning Detour. This is the Kobe tribute episode. Let's play some music and come back with some local news.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yeah. I don't want to keep you up, but show me, can you keep it up? Cause then I'll have to keep you up, so maybe I'ma keep you up. I've been drinking coffee, and I've been eating healthy.
I've been eating healthy.
No one keeps squeaky.
No one keeps squeaky.
Saving up my energy.
Saving up my energy.
Can you stay up all night? Love me till the daylight. 30 for 35. Can you stay up all night?
All night.
Love me till the daylight. 30 for 35.
All night, fuck off a jet lag. You bring your finances and overnight back. Add up the numbers or get behind that. Play and rewind that. Listen, you'll find that. I want that 6-9 without Tekashi. And I want your body and I make it obvious. Wake up the neighbors, we got an audience. They hear the clapping, but we not applauding. 6 o'clock and I'm crushing. Then it gets 7 o'clock, now he running. When it hit 8 o'clock, we said, fuck it. Forget you, girl. Pretend that I'm her. Can make a cap hurt and make my back hurt. Hey, making ass work and rain the shower and spray. Now that's baby, we don't sleep enough, but I'ma keep you up if you can keep it up.
Baby, can you stay up all night?
All night.
Love me till the daylight. 30 for 35. Can you stay up all night? Love me till the daylight. 30 for 35.
Rocky like a baby, but you know I'm about to keep you up. Welcome to my channel, and today I'm about to teach you something. I can make it pop, legs up like a can-can. Wake the neighbors up, make it sound like the fan plan. Let me get cute. Yeah. He's about to come through. Hopping in the shower for about a whole hour. Yeah. He finna act a foul game, yeah. So he get the foul kitty. Netflix or Hulu, baby, you choose. I'm up like Starbucks, 3 pumps, ooh. This good for your health, call it superfood. When I'm by myself, DIY like a shoe too. Bad, 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 all the boys wanna spank me. Devil on red, girlfriend, need a thank me. Vegas toast point, ballerina, no tutu. Baby, I'm the best, I don't know what the rest do. Dive in that water like a private island. 34, 35, we can 69 it. And I've been a bad girl, but this on a good list. I hope you ain't tired. We ain't stopping till I finish.
Can you stay up all night? Love me till the daylight. 30 for 35. Can you stay up all night? Love me till the daylight. 30 for 35.
Means I wanna 69.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Now we feeling wavy. Chilling somewhere in the tropics with my ladies. By the time my boy wanna, we gon' need some more that conga. Cause I've been looking at me and my girls, we fly as can be. Dripping in sensuality, two stepping to
I'm surprised I ain't panicking yet. 100K flight to land on a jet. We flew out and surrendered through the chest. Feel the heat. Don't you worry if you can't dance.
let the music move your feet. It's the rhythm of the island and like sugar cane, so sweet. If you wanna do the conga, you got to listen to the beat.
I got shorty with me making plans on the jet.
Couple more sips on my lips and we set, baby.
Get what you want, pee what you want.
Say less, do more, get your body on the dance floor.
I got shorty with me making plans on the jet.
Couple more sips on my lips and we set, baby.
Get what you want, pee what you want.
Say less, do more, get your body on the dance floor.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yes, welcome back, Montreal, my city. It's the mighty CKT 90.3 FM. It's the Morning Detour. Wheezy Moon Chaser, joined here by Lorena. Now it's about that time for us to do some local news, Lorena. A lot of things is going on. People's chirping me out here. It's early in the morning. Let me talk, do some news. So from a great adventure to resignation, the rise and fall of Julie Payette. So Canada's Governor General, Julie Payette, has resigned following the scathing findings of independent review into a workplace abuse allegation that has been levied against her. Sources have told Global News that the findings left Pyatt with two options: to resign or be fired, Lorena. That's how they do things, Lorena, now. At the highest of courts, be fired or resign. They should have fired her. She shouldn't have resigned. But let's go into some. So even when she got this appointment, there's some sketchy things with her former partner. So it was already on rocky ground, right? So there was a peppering of scandals and unflattering reports over the years took on new relevancy in the summer of 2020 when CBC News first reported allegations from multiple sources that Payette fostered a toxic, harassing work environment. The highest of government, even harassment is happening up there. Now, people listening to the show, we all have had jobs where we've had dealings with our boss. We felt our boss was treating us a little bit unjustly. And you'll never think that in the highest of courts, than the highest of profession, that this wouldn't happen. The governor general is shouting at her employees.
I think that would still happen high up.
You would think there'll be a little bit more class. You think there'll be a little bit more structure, Lorena. So employees at Rideau Hall alleged to CBC News that Payette had yelled and had publicly humiliated staff members. Individuals who later spoke to Global News under the condition of and I can't even say the words. It's too much. Vowels. Anonymity. Listen, they didn't want nobody to know who was making these cans. But they're fearing that coming forward could damage their career prospects. Express similar experiences. Now that's one of the things that I want to discuss with you here, Lorena. A lot of us sometimes are afraid to speak out for injustice within the workplace because a lot of people fear losing their job. I was just telling one of my coworkers yesterday. People have bills. People have kids. People have responsibilities outside of their profession. So a lot of people are afraid to rock the boat. But my question to you, Lorena, at what point should someone let themselves be violated or let their rights be taken for granted, even in the workplace, specifically in the workplace, before they stand up for themselves, even though they may risk losing their job?
That is really tricky because especially in a place like Quebec, it's small, news travels fast. So even if you do speak up, maybe you'll be tagged as somebody that's like difficult to work with because exactly. You did speak up and you did stick up for yourself or maybe other coworkers who didn't want to speak up. So it's really tricky because that may happen. But yes, we need a job. We need to pay our bills. We need to, take care of our kids and different things like that. So it's hard to say, but I truly believe that you should speak up and you shouldn't wait too long because I think the longer you wait, the worse that it could be.
I like to let people know, too, there are resources available for people that feel that they're being treated unjustly at their job. Their Norme du Travail has an office that you can reach out to them. I've went through the process with them. They're very thorough. They're very good. And you know what, Lorena? We got paid. So we was happy for that adventure as well. Well, I'm really happy about this. Lorena is the president of the Crown Projects, a nonprofit. It's a beautiful thing. Every year, we do the clothing drive. So we're very, very in tune with the homeless and the people that are in need in our city. And we've come to find that there's over 70,000 homeless people residing within Montreal. So finally, you know, I would have hoped this had happened sooner, but Luina, we never worry about when things happen. We're just happy that they happen, right? So mm-hmm. Montreal converts arena soccer stadium into homeless shelters. So two new shelters, warming centers set to open over coming days. Thank God, because it's been getting cold over the last couple of days, right, Luina? So,
yep.
So dozens of Montrealers experiencing homelessness will have a new place to sleep tonight as the city scrambles to overcome a lack of shelter capacity made worse by the recent COVID-19 outbreaks. So a new temporary homeless shelter has opened at the Pierre Charbonneau Sports Arena near the Olympic Stadium and will remain in operation until at least March 31st. They might have to push that one a little further down because, you know, our winters are really unpredictable. This one might stretch all the way into June, Lorena. More good news, the Red Cross is also setting up about 150 beds at the Stade de Soccer de Montréal on Papineau Avenue for people without homes who test positive for COVID-19. So that's really dope, too, giving them a place to be together. The 24-hour shelter at Pierre Charbonneau Arena is a collaboration between community group CAP Saint-Barnabé and CARE Montreal. Right now, it has only 40 beds, but it will eventually be able to welcome up to 112 people, with 30 of those spaces reserved for women. That's really good, especially for women that are in a domestic abuse household and can't seem to find out, right? And now there's a safe haven for them as well now. So Montreal Public Health Director Dr. Mylène Drouin said Friday that this is one of many reasons COVID-19 outbreaks are difficult to control among people experiencing homelessness. She goes on to say there's a high mobility with this population, so people are moving from one shelter to another, from one place to another, said Drouin. So now by making sure there's a place that they can always go to, that they can stay permanently, this should kind of bring down the curve a little bit more. We're going to talk about the curve in a minute, too, Lorena. I'd just like to add as well, since the beginning of December, Durant said 192 people experiencing homelessness have tested positive for COVID-19, along with 82 people from the community groups who work with them. So hopefully this will get to a place where we can kind of bring down this curve a little bit. And it's great, man. It's cold and a warm place for the homeless people. Great stuff. Let's add some more madness. Quebec will exempt homeless from COVID-19 curfew after court finds rule endangered safety. So now when our Premier Francois Legault decided to do the curfew, did nobody think about the homeless? And that just shows how the homeless people in our city is like an afterthought for our government, right? So the Quebec government says it will not challenge a temporary court order exempting the province's homeless population from the nightly curfew implemented to stem the tide of the novel coronavirus. So Lionel Carmont, Junior Health Minister, announced the decision on social media Wednesday morning. He said the government will amend its decree to ensure the health order is not applied to those without fixed address. Now, there's kind of a little pushback from Legault a little bit. Lorena, you tell me if he's shady, right? Legault, our Premier Francois Legault, he says, police show good judgment when dealing with the homeless. He also argued some people might pretend to be homeless to avoid curfew fines. Now, I want to say this. I'm really starting to look at how our police in Montreal is being trained. Because if you're trying to convince me, Mr. Francois Legault, that the SPVM cannot tell between a real homeless person and somebody pretending to be homeless, we have a very big problem with our police, which we already do already. But the problem is much worse than we anticipated it to be, right? You're telling me the SPVM cannot tell a homeless person from someone that's pretending to be homeless. That's what Legault's trying to tell me?
I think it's weird because when you're a police, you're stationed in a certain area. You get to know who's homeless in that area. Yeah. Like, for me working downtown, I knew who the homeless people were.
Right.
Well, you get to know who's who. So you could definitely tell who's homeless, who's not. And I don't know. I think it's a mess.
I just wanted to see the Montreal to remember, too, that about a month ago, a homeless man was found dead in a portable toilet. So we're trying to avoid these kinds of situations. That's where we're opening up these centers, these soccer stadiums, to provide a safe haven for our homeless in our city, which are part of our society as well. There has to be more help. A study shows 11% of Quebec businesses are at risk of shutting down, according to Global News. 11% of Quebec businesses are at risk of shutting down. Now, the number might seem small, but that's a lot of jobs. Let's go a little further, Lorena. During a news conference about the pandemic on Tuesday, Quebec Premier Francois Legault cited the study conducted by the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses that shows that 11% of businesses in the province are at risk of closing. He compared that. Our premier is always comparing things to other things to try to diffuse what's going on right here. So this is another tale for him right now. He compared that to Ontario, which stands at 20%, and the rest of Canada, which sits at 17%. Legault added that the results showed that the help the Quebec government has provided businesses during the health crisis have produced the best results. Now, I know a lot of bars, I know a lot of entrepreneurs that will beg to differ. But I know Fossil Go will say, you can't please everybody. Okay. But the Federation behind the study says, not so fast, Mr. Francois Legault. They cite, if Quebec could lose 11% of its businesses due to COVID-19, putting at risk 300,000 jobs. 11% translates to 300,000 jobs. It is everything but good news, says Francois Vincent, Quebec's vice president at the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses. That's a really big problem, Lorena. That's a really big problem. That's a really big problem. It's not looking good.
Not at all.
But the deeper question now, you know, Vincent goes on to stress that more still needs to be done for Quebec businesses. During a virtual press conference Wednesday, Montreal Valerie Pont, she weighed in as well, Lorena. She said if the province plans to keep businesses shut down as part of a lockdown measure, that more needs to be done to help. I quote her in saying that there has to be help for businesses for the retail sector, restaurants, bars. There has to be help, she said. Now, it's cool that we've identified the problem. There has to be help. How is this help going to come?
And who are they actually going to help?
Lorena, you're going too far, Lorena. Yeah, let's bring up a solution. A lot of these entrepreneurs, they're saying they're not looking for a handout, but there needs to be a plan here. There needs to be a plan to kind of sustain these 11%. We cannot afford to lose 300,000 jobs.
No.
But Legault is going to play on the 11% because that's a smaller number in comparison to the 100%. But 300,000, that's real. That's jobs. I think, you know my suggestion already, Lorena. Let's take some of this curfew ticket money, some of this ticket money, and let's allocate that to the businesses and the bars and the retail sectors that have obviously been affected over the last year and a half by this COVID-19 pandemic.
I don't know. I still think the key word is plan. I don't think Legault's good at planning. He's not a planner. So we need a better plan.
How can you leave a province, Lorena, if you're not good at planning? You should have ideas and understand how to put them in planning and action. Well, I got some good news. I've been so broken up about the kids. You know, the kids that are in school and then they're doing a virtual, then they're in school and then they're more closely around other kids with COVID, and it's a whole mess. Quebec finally unveils tutor recruitment platform to support students struggling amid pandemic. Finally, Quebec has awoken. They have arrived. The Minister of Education has said, you know what, I'm going to show up to work this week. So Quebec unveiled its platform on Wednesday to recruit tutors to help vulnerable students affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. The tutoring program announced on January 8th was set up to provide long-term supports for students until June 2022, and that's really good. College and university students, as well as retired teachers and other educational professionals, will be able to register through the Répondez Présent platform on the government on the Quebec government website. So, Lorena, the way this is looking, current staff and substitutes must submit their application directly to the school service center, their school board, or private educational institution. Education Minister Jean-François Roberge finally showed up to work. Also announced partnerships with Alloprof and Telgen, representing an investment of nearly $12 million. A lot of money moving around, but that's good. It's towards education, towards helping kids try to cope. You know, now we're moving. There was a plan. We're going to do half homeschool, half there. And now they're allocating resources to assist the kids that are really trying to still get their education on amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, Lorena, I don't know how optimistic you're going to be about this. I don't like when I see news reports and they say hint and maybe and I don't know. But Legault is hinting at a possible lifting of certain COVID-19 measures in some Quebec regions. So in a press conference on January 26th, Premier François Legault hinted that some regions of Quebec may see their COVID-19 restrictions lifted after February 8th. I thought the curfew was going to be lifted regardless at February 8th. What I always tell you, Lorena, watch the play within the play. So Legault said that the number of daily COVID-19 cases in Quebec decreasing steadily over the past week means that the curfew and lockdown in Quebec are working. Now, this is a very tricky slope. This is a very slippery slope, I should say. He's trying to directly associate his curfew measure to the now steadily decreasing numbers of COVID-19 in Quebec. Now, Lorena, how do you feel about it? I think it's kind of shaky. You know, are we seeing causation here? I don't know. Do you believe that the curfew has directly impacted the fact that the numbers have been decreasing in Quebec right now?
I don't know what to think, but I feel like he shouldn't be giving us false hope. Like, at this point, just announce something when you know it for sure. Like,
I'm going crazy, Larina. I need to see a beach. I'm going stir crazy. I'm tired of everything. He goes on to say, our premier Fonso Go, he goes, I want to thank all Quebecers who follow. Did I kind of do his voice there? I'll do my method acting here in a little bit. But Legault goes on to say, I want to thank all Quebecers who follow the rules and our police officers who apply them. However, Legault explained that the COVID-19 situation is more difficult in the greater Montreal area. So it seems like it's going to be a tale of two cities again, Larina. So the greater Montreal area is going to be a different kind of restrictions, and everybody around us will just be lifted. It's real crazy right now. Legault also warned Quebecers that the province should remain cautious due to new variants of COVID-19 that have emerged in Ontario, urging Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to take action on international flights to Canada. This international flights are a really, really big problem. So Legault says it's time to act. We can either ban non-essential travel or isolate travelers in hotels. Which one would you rather, Larina? Ban non-essential travel or isolate travelers in hotels after their travels?
I feel like they should ban, because I don't know if the isolation is really going to work. And I want this to be over because I would like to travel.
Listen, I did an episode, shout out to Leah McFly. She was on the Running with Wolf podcast this week. We did a very spiritual awakening episode, fifth dimension, third eye. Talked about a lot of different things, man. Very powerful wisdom stuff. But she's live in Mexico, and I was jealous because I'm seeing the sunlight. She's on the terrace. The video's up there on the YouTube, Running with Wolves. I told her, I hate the fact that you're there and I'm not there with Larina sipping on some nice Corona Bear or something. Larina, it's crazy. But let's shift our focus to something a little bit more serious here. UCAM is demanding the SPVM to do more for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. You start to wonder, a lot of people have a lot of problems with the SPVM. I'm starting to wonder to myself, what do they really do? What are the police really doing? Because they're taking this curfew ticket thing really, really serious. I would love if they use that same energy to solve some murders, to really make equity fair across the board in the city a little bit, but that's not the case. Quebec Native Women Inc. and a team from UCAM are joining forces to call on the SPVM to take serious action towards finding solutions for the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls crisis in Montreal. See, you see that? Why isn't this national news?
This has been happening for years.
I didn't even know. You know something is serious when they call it a crisis. This is not a problem. It's not an issue, Larina. It's a crisis. This study highlights that minimal progress has been made following a 2015 collaborative agreement between the Montreal Urban Aboriginal Community Strategy Network and the SPVM related to police interaction with Indigenous peoples in Montreal. Well, listen, y'all been waiting. Black people is waiting for the recommendation. Everybody's waiting. So we do the legwork. We do the work for them because they should be assessing their work anyway. But okay, the different groups that feel that they're being marginalized do the work for them, provides the recommendations, and then nothing. And there's like, okay, the SPVM kind of does the thing where, Larina, where they acknowledge, okay, we acknowledge the recommendations, but what's the next step? It's cool to have ideas, it's cool to have a plan, but where's the execution from the SPVM in Montreal? Where is the execution? So, specifically, the study asks, how has the Service de Police de Ville de Montréal responded to the crisis of the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls? No one has a clue. No one's answered, and that's sad. That's sad. We do not care about our Indigenous women and girls in this province. And it's demonstrated by our actions. It's demonstrated by how the police and by how our government treats our Aboriginal people. According to the researchers, the lack of services offered that are adapted to the needs of Indigenous communities and their members, especially by public services such as the SPVM, exacerbates the crisis. This is an alarming observation that requires immediate in-depth reflection.
Yeah, no, it's sad. It's been happening for years. Every so often, you'll see a representative come on the news, but nothing is done.
Yeah, so the report suggests a human rights-based approach, which I think is a really great approach for a plan. Most importantly, the goals emphasize the need for respect and support by the community. It is important to remember that the obligation of the SPVM to protect these rights is not limited to finding a missing Indigenous woman. It also entails a commitment to prevention, to diligence, and this can only be achieved through real cooperation with Indigenous organizations, says Michelle. Sounds apropos to me, Lorena. Well said. Listen, I, you know, my heart really bleeds for the Aboriginal community because, you know, they do really get the bad end of the stick, and we have to do better. So I'm just trying to bring awareness to it. Montreal, my city. Now, shifting news a little bit, still in Montreal. Montreal is now asking the Canadian government to decriminalize simple drug possession. Now, I know my weed smokers. I just dropped my mom to work this morning, Lorena. They be lining up in front of the SQDC.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I wish they went to school that way. I mean, I wish they were out to protest that way, Lorena. They're at the SQDC early.
Yep.
So a majority voted in favor of adopting the motion to call on the Canadian government to decriminalize the simple possession of drugs for personal use as Montreal City's Council on January 26th. So by ratifying this motion, the City of Montreal is adopting a change of direction that has become more than urgent, a joint press release from various community organizations reads. The hope with this motion is that it will send a clear message to the federal government to move away from repressive policies and to make the decriminalization of simple possession of drugs for personal use a reality for the benefit of our society and its citizens. I don't know why we can't just have a real conversation. Is smoking cannabis bad or good? I mean, like, if it's not detrimental to us, no different than cigarettes, no different than alcohol, we really need to start taking away the stigma that's associated with some of these drugs. That's my opinion. Where do you kind of land on it, Lorena?
I agree. I think there needs to be a real conversation, but, I mean, I don't know how real it's going to get. But, yeah, it should be taken away, but I don't know if they're actually going to do that. It's probably going to take them a couple of years to get there.
Oh, boy. Well, listen, that's all I have for news. And since as you guys can see, 11% of the jobs are going to be gone, now is the time. We know looking for a job is a job in itself. But in more detail, I'm partnering up with GotTheJob.ca to help you get a CV makeover and land the job of your dream. Because the government is not going to look out for you, so you got to look out for yourself. So if you use our promo code DETOUR5 to get a discount on your purchase today, and GotTheJob will prepare you for the profession of your dream. So there you go. It's the more detail. I'm going to play some more music. And when we come back, Lolo's going to tell us about the culture.
Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Them say them love we, but that I ain't see them. Get where them want and switch it up already. Them not go draw we out on no, no today. It not so easy fi drain the energy. Our blessings follow anywhere where we dey. How good we good with everybody.
Woman them royal, soldier them loyal, casual or formal, them selling no normal. Flow them immortal, yeah, more than a jawful, yeah. Rhythm them awful, wicked and lawful, and we not stopping, no. And no time for no stoplight, man I travel at top speed. But this are the top flight, this are the big league. So every 8 bar or 16 is a big deal. Food for your tata and a kid's meal. Package it proper, it been sealed. Recipe of a master. Them boy they can't boil water. Cooking up a recipe a disaster. That are the reason, this are my season. Them my degrees are torture. That where they torture, different peaks. So regular people now walk at. Me I compete with my past self. That is what making me sharper. Look what we achieve every quarter. Way before we make a quarter. Always have heart, so when time's hard, we pick up and we are go harder. None of my people not starve, yeah, yeah. Me have the world in my palm, take it and bring it a yard, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Them say they love we, but that guy ain't see them. Get where them want and switch it up already. Them not gonna draw we out on no, no, today. It not so easy if you drain the energy. God bless his father.
Yeah.
it up.
Reggae the top of the market. If there is ever a problem, listen to the album and that go the savage way. I tell you clean way, you said I can. We not go with the flow where your head died. Sevilla will it down like a Jedi. Couple souls, couple days, pan a road in a bed and the dance just come in pan a red eye bow. Cerebral flow in my head I go. Try reach me now, but my cell line slow. I keep it low, it's like where I go. Try teach me how, but I said I know. People know me like it, like hope, and I need to know premise when I show. I collect my dough, do my thing and go.
No, when you say hello, proto, the world noto, them one moto. Touchdown UK, sell out show. New minister culture, we get some vote.
A regular, we have a transit to airport, and I make a way outstanding to airport. Could you forget how me belong me to engross? And if me ever drop a song, dig it reinforce. Yeah, strong like a tonica. Be the drum and they play the harmonica. Dig it down the baddest on the planet. Supersonic, tougher than a granite.
We are professor, them are the janitor. Oppressor, them are fret and a panic, so you know, see the difference. The caliber, no less than atomic when we drop it automatic. Say a bang.
Them say them love we, but that I see them. Get where them want and switch it up already. Them not go draw we out on no no today. It not so easy if you change the energy. The blessings follow anywhere where we dey. A good with everybody.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Montreal, my city. Welcome back. It's another Friday. We're still celebrating Kobe, but now it's time to get down deep into some issues here. I'm your host, Wheezy, joined by K per usual. Now, we all know what's going on. While millions of Canadians stay at home to keep safe and help flatten the curve for one group of Canadians, home has become more dangerous than ever. Victims of domestic violence are experiencing a greater threat as many are confined to their homes with their abusers. Let me hit you guys in Montreal with some facts here. Half of all women in Canada have experienced at least one incident of physical or sexual violence since the age of 16. Okay, that's crazy. 67% of Canadians say they have personally known at least one woman who has experienced physical or sexual abuse. Approximately every 6 days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner. There's definitely an issue here going on in the country. So I said, you know what? Let me bring on someone that's helped millions of people. He is a black unicorn. He's a social worker and a psychotherapist. He has a master's in couple and family therapy, as well as a master's in social work, both from McGill University. So you know, the highest school in the land. He provides short-term intervention for stress, anxiety, and other issues. And it's important that I mention this. He's licensed and registered to practice in Quebec. I want to welcome to the show, to the Morning Detour, Mr. David Archer. How are you doing, King?
Yo, many blessings, man. Respect. Listen, respect you... with that introduction. Thank you.
Listen, you've helped so many different people here. But before we dive deep into domestic violence, let's get a little bit of context in terms of how did you get into therapy and want to help people and being a social worker? Where did that passion, where did that love come from?
Well, the thing is that, so my parents are Jamaican, and like many other people in like Montreal, like we all come from different places from the diaspora.
Yeah.
And it's just, I know that like being raised as a second generation immigrant, because mm-hmm. that's what I am, mm-hmm. is that even though my name is David Archer, and even though I was raised in the so-called, we call this the city of Montreal, Quebec, just on a side note, this is actually the unceded territory of the Ganyengahaga people.
Tell them.
And we should call it Jochjaga, because that's the real name that the Iroquois Confederacy would give it. But being in this society, there was always this understanding mm-hmm. that me being a black person meant that there's certain things that were afforded to others mm-hmm. that would not be afforded to me. That me being a man, that there's certain privileges that I'd have that other people would not have. And I know that when I was in high school, there was no idea or possible, there was no possibility that I'd ever step into an institution of like any university standing whatsoever. But the reason why I bring up my cultural heritage is because were it not for my parents, were it not for my mother especially, of like just always trying to instill what it means to really be a black person,
right.
what it means to be a person who can be proud of being a black Jamaican Canadian. And I also add middle name African, because that's where we're all from.
Right.
I think that this idea of me needing to go down this route was something that I was kind of born into. Mm-hmm. I was born into a situation in this province where it's English versus French versus black versus white versus native versus non-native. So it was almost impossible for me to not look at the world through a lens of identity, And I also was just committed to this idea that people are able to heal, that people can change. So it's to say that as much as I chose psychotherapy, I think that psychotherapy chose me.
Oh, man. Listen, the calling. You have to know where you're needed. Some of your earlier work was on the Native Reserve, and you and I were speaking a little bit off air that how the treatment of the Aboriginal communities in Canada, it kind of goes, you know, not seen, not heard. And, you know, and you think to yourself, these people have been here since the beginning. They're the original people on the land. And just the way we've treated them has been really despicable in terms of Canadian culture. So I found it very commendable that some of your earlier works was on the Native Reserve. What were some of the things that you saw, some of the issues that you saw when you were working on these reserves?
Yeah, like the thing is that it's important to just shout out like the people of Ganawaga because, you know, these are people who have survived countless attempts at extermination and countless attempts and of exploitation and destruction. And despite that, they still have their language intact. They still have their cultural practices intact. So it's a little strange me going there because Jamaica, many other countries as well have been colonized by the same, by the scourge of like what we can call white supremacy and colonization that has destroyed as many black people. And like, you know, it actually is the glass cannon is what I usually call it, is that it does have this strong effect on non-white people, but it also has a crippling effect on white people as well. But I'll talk about that later. That's in the book.
don't we got time?
Let me just put a teaser in there. Let me just put that in. But yeah, but it's really to say, it's like when I was in Ganawaga, I was working as an addictions counselor, and I noticed that it was impossible to be able to treat the addiction without talking about what it means for a native to be addicted to alcohol. It's not only the specific present issue that we're treating, we're also addressing and assessing the past instances that alcohol was used as a way of being able to exploit the native individuals. There's a book that I'm reading right now called 200 Years of Canadian Slavery. We weren't taught this in school about the fact that there were many Native Americans that were enslaved. Right. There were also some black people that were enslaved as well. I'm learning more and more about this every day. But all of that just to go, I like to talk around the issue.
We dancing. Okay. I marked down. Yeah, I need to get that book because a lot of Canadians believe that, you know, this is ideology around the world that Canada didn't have slavery, that Canada didn't have slaves. But you have to watch the verbiage. There was indentured servitude. They played with the words, but we had slaves in Canada as well.
Exactly. So they had indentured servitude for white people, and then for natives, they were actually slaves. For black people, they were actually slaves. But it's the reason why I say this is because you can't necessarily treat the present issue relating to addiction without talking about what it means that people for generations and generations were given alcohol in order to facilitate trade, to facilitate the exploration of this so-called country. And I say so-called because, as I said before, Montreal is the unceded territory of the Ganyangahaga people. So in the same way, I think that the 5 years that I worked in the Native community doing addictions, it helped me to recognize the strength and the importance of culture, the importance of language, of what that means for a people to be able to pass on these traditions. And it also helped me to know that with addiction comes trauma.
Yeah.
There's never been an addict that I've met who did not also have some form of trauma. And again, when we go and we research what trauma means, then we start to see that the trauma that affects us sometime is an echo from the past of things that have affected our grandparents and our parents as well. We're not fully clear on how many generations this multi-generational transmission of hypersensitivity for our HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, our stress response system. We don't know how many generations that passes down, but the Native tradition does say that our actions today will impact the seven generations that follow. So I think that as much as I brought my Western knowledge of psychotherapy to them, I learned so much more and learned a deeper sense of psychotherapy by learning from the elders that I met, from the community members, and also the clients. The clients were definitely my best teachers when I was working in Ganawaga.
So yeah, I think you touched on something that is very important and very interesting. You mentioned the importance of, you know, community and your history and your background. And well, mm-hmm. I'm from the French Caribbeans. There's a lot of Black people there, a lot of Indians mm-hmm. as well. And I know that mm-hmm. there's a history there also of domestic abuse. And pretty much we don't necessarily talk about certain of the issues that are going on at home. And we try to keep that within the families. So I guess my question would be, what are the different types of domestic abuse and domestic violence? And how can someone from your family or a friend can recognize that something is going on or some signs maybe?
Okay. Well, that's a big question.
But take your time, Chief. David Archer in the building.
Yeah. Let me see what I can do about this. Okay. Is that there was a time that I want to send out a shout out to Tom Kaplan, actually. He's the person who runs the McGill Domestic Violence Clinic. Mm-hmm. So I spent some time working over there as well. And what I found is that although I was mostly working with the male, the male abusers, is that there's something about the dynamic when we're talking about gendered violence towards women, where we're not getting the full story unless we also address what it means to be a woman, mm-hmm. what it means to be a man, what it means to be a Black man, what it means to be a Black woman. And so, yes, there are issues of domestic violence in the Black community. And yes, if we just listen to like the stats that Mr. Moonchaser was saying at the beginning of our broadcast, then we know that this is not only an individual issue, this is a social issue. We're not talking about domestic violence unless we talk about patriarchy. We're not talking about domestic violence unless we talk about the role of violence that takes place. But the main ways how we can actually like look out for one another is for people to really see that we're all interconnected. In our Western culture, there's a lot of this individualism, mm-hmm. but there's also this idea that the woman must be subordinated. And as much as we try to say that we don't, as much as we'll look at other countries and say they're not as feminist as we are, we have a lot of problems. We've got a lot of work that needs to happen on this side of the world. So all of this just to say is that if we're looking for specific signs, one is just to find out if there is some form, because let me just say that physical violence is usually the last stage, okay? There's first indicators that may take place. And because our culture is, it's conflictual, the origin of our country is based on violence yeah. and based on exploitation, then we may see some of these things in some of our day-to-day relationships, like teasing and bullying and all of that stuff. So usually you're going to see violence that looks more emotional. There can also, it can just be just little ways of just subjugating the person, a little jab here and there. It could be. It doesn't mean it's always going to progress to domestic violence. But there could also be little financial things too. Sometimes men will have the financial advantage in the relationship if we're talking about heterosexual relationships. And that's because in our society, men make more than women because yeah. feminism is still a work in progress over here. So the thing is that there are ways that a man might limit power or limit access. Yeah. But one of the key things I would often see in my clients who have been through this issue is that the man sometimes will find ways of being able to prevent the woman from connecting to her friends, yeah. can find ways of being able to control access. So it's not only the control of access to funds, it's also the control of access to your family, the control of access to other community members, because we know that every form of trauma becomes more intense in isolation. When we don't talk about mental health issues, they become much worse. When we don't seek out help, they get much worse. But in the abuser-abused relationship, if there's no outside help, then it allows the system to continue upon itself. So there's multiple things that you can look out for, but it's really to say that we gotta start to think about, if this is happening that frequently, yeah. if femicide is an issue like this, like how it is, why are we not really talking about it? And I have my suspicions, but I don't think
we gotta get you on the morning detour after dark. But what we're talking about here is approximately every 6 days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner. Every six yeah. days, we're losing another woman in this country.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that, like, why would it happen so frequently if it's not a part, like, it's definitely not an individual issue. I'll explain it in this different way, okay, is that there's a little bit of research that says, let's say that we have a normal, like your average heterosexual couple, so that there's a man and there's a woman, and let's say they both have two children. One of them is a son and the other one is a daughter. If the son is to witness that his father is violent towards the mother, mm-hmm. when he grows up, there's an increased chance that he's going to seek out a relationship where he would be able to victimize his partner. But the important thing to know is that if the daughter also witnesses this interaction, seeing her mother being beaten, seeing her mother being attacked in this way, she too is going to seek out a relationship where she can also replicate the same system. Okay? When you've seen that people will go from toxic relationship to toxic relationship, oftentimes when you ask them about their parental, their parental situation, then you'll see that the apple does not fall far from the tree. But it's important for us to know that these are unconscious things. These are things that it's not as if the woman is choosing to be in an oppressive relationship. It's not as if the man is really choosing to be, like, wanting to be violent. These are unconscious processes that are reinforced in the society, especially if we're seeing them echo, like, if they're happening to so many people, then it's not just limited to just our race. It's not just Black people that are doing this. This is something that's it means that many people are getting the same message. So that's why I say that I'm talking from the lens of psychotherapy. I'm talking from the lens of a family therapist. But ultimately, these mental health issues, because that's what they are also social and political issues at the same time. We cannot talk about mental illness without talking about the social construction of mental illness.
No, I think definitely it is a social issue. I did study sociology in university. There is definitely a few, a few documentations about this. There's a few research going on about mm-hmm. this. So I think it's more than just specifically, therapy, physiotherapy, psychotherapy. We're here on a morning detour. This is Soke. I'm here with Wheezy Moonchaser and psychotherapist David Archer. We're discussing domestic violence. There's actually, since the pandemic started, there's been a peak in, domestic violence reports, according to an article from CTV from October 2020, so late 2020. The helplines for women experiencing violence at home were reporting dramatic increases in calls since the public health measures aimed at fighting the spread of COVID-19 came into place. And it's not just in Canada. We're talking about mm-hmm. something that is going on globally. So even in France, I'm from France, and France, there's been a rise in these domestic cases as well. Is there any tips or any advice that you can give to maybe women or men that are listening right now that are currently in these situations and that are not necessarily able to get out of their situations? Is there mm-hmm. any advice you could give them so that they can go through with it or.
Sure. So I'll say a few things, is that domestic violence is a very challenging topic for many people. And again, I'm an anti-racist psychotherapist as well. So I have to bring it back to race and to social issues, because that's just the way, it's the lens that I use. But it's really to say that, like, I think that what we really need to do is we need to really reflect on this COVID-19 thing for a second.
Yeah.
Is that in addition to being an anti-racist psychotherapist, I'm also a mindfulness meditator. And what COVID-19 has done is, in a way, we've all signed up, whether willingly or unwillingly, to this meditation retreat, where all of us are forced into isolation, where all of us are mindful of our breathing, of the way how we're breathing, the rate that we're breathing. We have this distance between each other. And through any mindfulness practice, if we are to sustain it for long enough, then we gain insights about ourselves, if we're open to it. So when we are confined for a specific amount of time, whether we like it or not, when we are confronted with ourself, we are confronted with what it means to be by ourselves, or what it means to be in our home, when we have enough time, when there's not as many distractions, then that's when some of the pain and the suffering comes out. This is what happens for any meditation, any person who's listening, who's been on a meditation retreat. We know that the first, some of the worst days are the first few days.
Yep.
First few, you know what I mean?
It sure is.
That's it. The first few days, these are the days where it's like you're confronting your ego at the highest level, and you're confronting all of your demons and all of the suffering that, that you carry within you. So it's not a surprise to see that there's higher levels of domestic violence at this time, because many of us carry trauma and we haven't, and we've suppressed it.
Yeah.
Many, we suppressed as a Wheezy. I'm gonna call you a different name this time.
No, but you're
Mr. Moon Chaser.
You're speaking truth to power.
Mr. Moon Chaser was this.
You're speaking truth to power, because I recently went through it, and I was like, you know, because I'm on the path to meditation with FEMO. And I went through it. So for years, my business partner and the producer of the show, Lorena, just telling me, like, you know, you're so busy all the time, you're repressing all of these emotions, because I'm a really cold person. So what happened during the holidays, it finally hit me where all this being at home and doing the shows from home, everything that I've been suppressing for the last 20 years crashed on me at the same time. So as if I was, my cup was finally overfilled by Christmas time. So now I'm dealing with all of these new external factors and my internal factors all crashing on me at once. And then I got it. I'm like, yo, I couldn't breathe. I was having panic attacks. I'm like, what's going on? And the one, and then one of the things you have to do is that you have to address your problems. You cannot placate it. You cannot pacify it. You have to look at your issues and see, okay, how can I put together an actionable plan to deal with each problem? You know what I mean?
100%.
So listen, I told you what you're going through. So if I'm going through that, I can only imagine someone that comes from a history of violence, violent parents or alcoholic parents, and now they're in a relationship and they're bringing the same kind of negative behaviors into their new relationship. I can only imagine the horror stories that's going on in people's household. That's why we, me and Kay, we needed you to come up here, Mr. Arch, and give some guidance. Because I think the biggest issue is that people are afraid to take that first step, which is recognizing they have an issue and seeking the resource to help themselves.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you may need someone. Sorry, I think sometimes you may need someone to help you recognize, not to tell you that you have an issue, but to have a conversation with you so that you yourself recognize that there's a problem. I recently had a friend, we sat down for 4 hours and we had a conversation. And this is within that conversation, at the end of the 4 hours, that she said, I was in an abusive relationship and I did not realize until we had that conversation today. And for now she's going through the process of seeking help. But this is something that I started 3 years ago, and we were talking and she stopped communicating with all of us, all our friends. And now she's starting to, you know, the process of speaking to people again. And it's only now that she's realizing it. So what Wheezy said about sometimes it takes time to hit you, you know, I cannot blame somebody that is not necessarily doing the work right now, because you might not have the resources right now to recognize that there is an issue.
Yeah. And also, if I can add the social context and analysis of it too, is that it's like after all of these years, they took down the John A. McDonald statue.
Yeah, after all these years.